Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
And happy Wednesday, Thursday, everybody. How's everybody doing today? Today is June 11th, and we are live on the Pull Up Podcast, bringing you an action-packed week of podcasts as we continue on with the NBA Finals. We have another great guest today in Alex Kennedy from Basketball Insiders. We have Bob Rathbun, the play-by-play caller for television for the Atlanta Hawks, coming by tomorrow. And these finals have been outstanding. If you're not watching, I do not know how to help you, but they have been fabulous. They've been competitive, and it's basically everything you want in an NBA Finals after having two short conference finals appearances. But without further ado, I'd like to welcome the guest, Alex Kennedy. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
We are doing great. So, Alex, I saw some scuttlebutt going on Twitter the other day that the time has finally come. Basketball Insiders has a podcast.
Yes, finally. I'm very excited about it.
Tell us a little bit about it and what you plan to, what the goal with the podcast is.
Well, basically, we're going to be putting them out twice a week. We're going to try to do it, throughout the off season too. So we're going to be talking, tons of draft, free agency, previewing next season. It's not going to go away. We're going to do it on Tuesdays and Saturdays, I believe. And really, our goal is to try to bring in all of our different, members of our team. So we get a lot of different voices on there. So we'll have people from different markets that are, chiming in and providing analysis. Steve Kyler and I did the first two episodes, and they're on iTunes, and they're on site as well. I've been tweeting out some links. And then this weekend, Steve Kyler and Joel Brigham will do one, and then next week, Mo Hamilton and I will take over. So we're going to be subbing guys in and out. We're talking basketball. Usually the shows are three segments, and they're about 45 to 50 minutes long. We're really looking forward to it. I think it's a fun way to, put out some content, show our personality a little bit. Obviously, we want, questions and input from listeners, too. I'm excited just to be in the podcast game. I'm joining you guys. You guys are the pros of this. I feel like it's about time we're finally doing this.
Right. Well, that makes sense why Moke has been ghosting me. I've been trying to get him on the pod during these playoffs, and he's just been too busy, and now it all makes sense. He's, he's sitting behind closed doors practicing his radio voice and getting his notes in line. But that's exciting. I mean, you guys do great content over there, and as you point out, and my favorite thing about the Basketball Insiders team is just, the diversity you guys have, and, you have guys who are excellent with cap numbers. You have guys who are, beat guys, kind of like you, breaking news and have the access to the players. I mean, Steve Kyler was great. He was actually on the old podcast Brian and I used to do before we had to change the name for legal reasons, but he was on with us, and he would never do podcast appearances, but he came on. It was great, and just the range of your staff is just such fun reads and different opinions, and I think it's going to be really well. So congratulations on starting it, and you definitely have a listener in me. So go to iTunes, type in Basketball Insiders, or is it Insiders Podcast?
It's Insider Sports on iTunes, and then we post the links on our website, too. So if you go to the front page on a Tuesday or a Saturday, you'll see it. But, yeah, you can subscribe, rate, and review us if you type in Insider Sports on iTunes.
Perfect. So there's more NBA podcasts for you to listen to. They are going to have – I hope you get some players on that. That'll be very exciting.
That's the goal, too.
Well, I think Wesley Matthews wants to talk about you snuffing him in your tweet about using Jeremy Lin and not his name.
Oh, man, yeah, that was a good one. Actually, it's funny. CJ McCollum's one of the guys I do want to get on, so one of his teammates. So maybe Wes can hook it up, we'll see. But, yeah, that was great. My point was, though, that someone like Matthew Dellavedova and Jeremy Lin, guys look at them and say, I can be that kind of role player. I think with Wes Matthews, young guys forget that he was undrafted. They see him as a top shooting guard. So it's interesting.
Right.
I think that, there was a bit of a misunderstanding there.
Hey, right, and not to discredit his, you know, work ethic, because obviously anybody who's at this level has worked harder than most. But I think when you look at guys like Matthew Dellavedova and Jeremy Lin, they give the, you know, the people who might not be as talented or as gifted more hope. Like, Wesley Matthews is a phenomenal player, so, you know, to look up to him, like, it might not be realistic for some of these guys who are on the fringe of, you know, making a bench or even making the D-League, for that matter. But let's jump into this NBA Finals here, because it has been fabulous. I'm loving it. I was actually praying for a blowout for Game 3 so us East Coasters can get a little bit of sleep. I decided not to go to sleep after Cleveland was up 20, and I'm glad I didn't, because it became a game. Curry turned it on. So my first question to you, Alex, is, did you see anything in Game 3 that the Golden State Warriors can use or build off of to go into Game 4?
Well, I think Curry playing well in the second half is huge for them, just from a confidence standpoint. He really struggled in the first two games shooting the ball. Matthew Dellavedova did a great job on him. But I think the fact that they were able to get him going a bit and he was knocking down shots, that should help them. They obviously lost the game, but, you know, maybe they can take that momentum, that confidence into the next game. And that could help them a bit, because look, they're at their best when Curry's playing his best basketball. Cleveland's made things very difficult for him by throwing, you know, two defenders at him at a lot of times, and you know, doing different looks to mess with his head a little bit and mess with him and throw some different defensive looks at him. But I think getting him going is important. I think the biggest thing, though, and Mike Prada of SB Nation wrote an awesome article breaking down the Cavs defense. You know, Draymond Green, Harrison Barnes, Andre Iguodala, these guys are getting wide open shots. Basically, the Cavs are just throwing two guys at Curry. They're shadowing Klay Thompson at all times and forcing Green, Barnes, and Iguodala to beat them. And so far, those guys haven't knocked down open shots, or they haven't taken the shots that they should. So I think that's a big thing, too. You know, it's tough because those guys have never been in the finals before, and obviously Green and Barnes are very young, so, you know, they're inexperienced. Now they're being asked to do a ton on a big stage. In these two games, they're obviously on the road, so it's a crazy environment. That's a lot to ask of these young guys, but if they can knock down shots, then I think that's really going to open things up, because then Cleveland has to change their defensive approach. They can't just throw two guys at Curry. You know, if Golden State starts knocking down these shots, then the Cavs have to adjust, and it changes things up a little bit. And then things do become easier for Curry and Thompson, I think.
So I want to play devil's advocate here for Curry, because someone else brought this point up on Twitter, and I apologize, forget who, but they said, you know, Curry went off when the pressure got off him. I mean, they're down 20. Cleveland kind of played a little relaxed there. You know, they just had such a big lead, and just it's a different game than when the pressure has been on, like games 1 and 2 and basically the whole first half of game 3. Are you buying that, you know, Curry was able to kind of go off when the pressure, you know, almost ceased when they had such a large lead and, you know, the Golden State Warriors almost looked defeated at that point? Everything was working for Cleveland, and basically the pressure was off Golden State, because at that point I think most people expected them to lose that game, and they did.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, we've seen that other times throughout the postseason, though, where they've come back from, you know, huge deficits. Obviously they did against the Pelicans, and Curry hit that crazy shot to force overtime. You know, this team is never really out of a game because of their shooting. So I think that, you know, instead of Curry just not being able to, you know, play when the pressure is high and him just playing well when there's really no pressure, I think what we saw was he was more willing to take those kind of threes. You know, he sometimes takes those crazy threes that for any other player would be an awful shot, but for Curry it's a pretty good shot. And, you know, he's been trying to make some of those throughout the series, but when you're down by 20, you almost have nothing to lose. You know, he might as well take those shots and, you know, try to knock them down. And then you got a few of them falling, and we saw him get hot. And I think with Curry, you know, if he gets a few shots to fall, he can get very scary. So I think it was more about him just getting in the rhythm and about him being more willing to take those shots just because they were down so much, so they had to settle for threes and try to come back that way. But I think it is interesting to see that Curry has struggled a bit during these finals, you know, especially because, you know, when Kyrie Irving went out, everyone thought Steph Curry would go off and he would just have, you know, this huge series. But Dellavedova has really frustrated him. I think having two defenders on him at most times has affected him a bit. And again, you know, as we said, inexperience definitely factors in when you're talking about a young team in the finals. And Mo Camelton wrote a recent article on our site, and it was very good, talking about how, you know, the teams that do the best in the finals are the ones that have experienced heartbreak and they've lost, and, you know, they've been there but didn't get it done. And he compared this Warriors team to the 2012 Thunder. That were a very young team. They had not much experience. And, you know, I think everyone just assumed, oh, they're going to be back here. You know, they're going to be back in the finals, and they're just happy to be here. He made that comparison, and I thought that was interesting because this Warriors team is very inexperienced, and, you know, they're relying on star players that had never been to the finals, and that's always pretty tough. So I'm curious to see how Curry responds, and but I do think that, you know, second half is going to be really good for him going forward just from a confidence standpoint. So that should be interesting. I really am curious to see what he does.
Yeah, no, and that's a great point. I actually brought that up in Twitter as well because you look at history, and every great has lost, you know, before they've been able to win. It takes losing to understand how to win, and we saw it with the Thunder in 2012, and I believe that's the team that Mo kind of made the comparison with. But you have to lose, and, you know, LeBron's lost enough, and he's also won, so he knows exactly what it would take to win. But I want to actually jump to something else that you actually have been doing very well this postseason, and that's your predictions, Alex. You know, you're the only one to pick Cleveland over Chicago on your team. You had a couple of wrong ones here, but, I mean, they were toss-ups. You know, Clippers over Houston. I think everyone else had Clippers and little stuff like that. So I want to ask you, based on the first three games, are you still confident? Because I had Warriors in five, so clearly I was wrong. But based on the first three games, would you change your prediction?
I would change my prediction. First of all, thanks for the compliments. I've been very lucky this postseason. Usually I'm horrible picking games, so I've been very lucky. But I had Warriors in six initially. Now I see it going seven games. And honestly, I could see it going either way. You know, the Cavs have done an excellent job on the defensive end, and I think they've really made things difficult for the Warriors. But I also think that the Warriors are, you know, a versatile team, and Steve Kerr is a very good coach. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch the chess match from here and see how they adjust and go back at the Cavs. So I could see the Cavs winning it, but I'm going to adjust my prediction and say that the Warriors win it in seven games. They're going to be on their home floor. That crowd's going to be insane for Game 7 of the NBA Finals if it comes. I think that's going to be, you know, what's going to happen. That's been my prediction. But I will say this. The Cavs have completely shocked me. I will admit that I was so wrong. I thought that whenever Kyrie Irving went down, that this would be a sweep or, you know, a five-game series. So I've now adjusted my prediction three times now. So from the start, I said Warriors in six. Then when Kyrie went down, I said, oh, it's going to be a short series. Now, you know, I'm going to stick with Warriors in seven. You know, I think the Cavs could get it done. It's very possible. But I'm just, you know, really curious to see if LeBron James can keep playing at this high level if this series does go six, seven games. That's going to be very difficult because he's carrying them right now and obviously doing a great job. But you know, he's getting IVs for cramping. He's going to be exhausted the longer this series goes. And I think the same goes for Matthew Dellavedova. You know, he's chasing Curry around screens. He's obviously cramping, getting IVs too. He's already in the hospital. If this series goes long, I think that really actually plays into the Warriors' hands, not only because they have home court advantage, but because the Cavs are going to be exhausted.
Right. And so going back to your new adventure in podcasting world, Alex, you're going to be phenomenal because you just segued into my next question. And my question was going to be the concern for the health of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I feel like the longer this series goes, the more trouble they're going to be in. And you point out, you know, being on the road for game five and seven, if it gets to seven, that's definitely going to be a challenge, especially because when we look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, it's been all LeBron, and at one point they're gonna need someone else to step up. I know Timothy Mozgov has played really well this postseason, including the finals. He's been probably the second most consistent behind LeBron James. Dellavedova came alive in Game Three, you know, chipped in where he could. J.R. Smith was, you know, has signs of light. Tristan Thompson is gonna get you your rebounds, but if you know one of those pieces doesn't work, or we get to the health issue here with these cramping and you know, these guys are playing 48 minutes a game that really don't have much of a bench. Is that a concern going forward, or do you kind of take the philosophy that I kind of believe in, is just run your players into the ground? This isn't time for rest. This isn't time for minute management. This is time for winning the game.
Well, I think there's a combination of both. I think you do want to rest guys. You know, if there's a blowout in the series, stars shouldn't be in the game. The Cavs should definitely take advantage of, you know, keep taking the guys out and trying to limit their minutes as much as possible. But you do want to have your best players on the floor as long as the game's competitive. But I am concerned about the Cavs, you know, going forward if this thing does go to six or seven games, just because I think that's where you're going to see guys just exhausted. And I think it helps them that, you know, in the finals there are some, you know, more days off. Obviously, this week there's been, you know, a little bit fewer. We've seen, you know, a game every other day for the most part. You know, very little rest. But I think going forward, there's going to be some more time between games, so that should help them a bit. But I just think that with, you know, the burden that LeBron is carrying right now and having to do everything, you know, averaging 41, 12, 8, and then, you know, playing great defense too with, you know, a steal and a half and a block per game, that's just phenomenal. And that's really hard to sustain. So I think that, you know, as long as this series goes on, if it's a short series, that's really good for Cleveland. If it's a long series, I do see them having some issues. And they really can't afford anyone else to go down either. You know, they've had so many injuries already. You know, if someone gets hurt and has to miss a game, then that's, you know, that's a huge problem for Cleveland. Whereas I think the Warriors could probably overcome that a bit more because they're relatively healthy right now. So it's going to be really interesting. I think that when you had the first two games go to overtime, that's really what kind of set the stage for this. You've had you already had a depleted team, and then they had to play two overtime games. So that, you know, ran them into the ground even more. So these guys are exhausted, and it's going to be really interesting to see how that affects the series.
So LeBron James is out of this world. There's no right or wrong answer for trying to stop him because it's a trick question. You can't. However, you have to do something. And I think I saw a stat that said, you know, out of the 280 possessions LeBron James has had, he was only doubled 15 of them. So clearly the one-on-one's not working. But then there's another stat I saw where, and this is just kind of common knowledge that most people have. If you watch the game, your eye tells you this, but he's least effective in isolation. So it's the catch-22 here, because you have to double him because he's eating everybody up. But at the same time, you want him, and this is how I feel teams have been successful with him in the past, is let him get comfortable taking pull-up jumpers. That's what you want out of LeBron James. You do not want him tacking the basket. You don't want him running the offense. You want him trying to be Ray Allen for, you know, all intents and purposes, just hucking up shots, because that's when you beat him, when he settles. So let me ask you, how would you, if you're Steve Kerr, adjust your game plan for game 4, 5, 6, and maybe 7, or would you at all?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you want him settling for jumpers, and I would start double-teaming him. I think so far their approach has been, you know, let's not let him facilitate. Let's just let him go get his points and put up a lot of shots. But obviously that's not working. He's averaging 41 points per game. You know, the most points any player has scored through three finals games. So clearly his offense is working right now. I think you need to force these other guys to beat you. You know, you want Matthew Dellavedova, Iman Shumpert, Tristan Thompson, Cody Mozgov having to step up and try to be the one to beat you. I think I would double LeBron, and you know, it's worked for the Warriors so far. You know, as you mentioned, doubling Curry and basically forcing the ball into, you know, Draymond Green and Harrison Barnes and Andre Iguodala's hands. I think I would do the same thing if I'm the Warriors. I would just put a ton of, you know, my entire defensive focus on LeBron James and see if, you know, Dellavedova, Shumpert, J.R. Smith, if those guys can knock down, you know, big shots. Because that's hard to do. You know, when you're open sometimes, that could be a really tough shot, especially in the finals. You know, guys overthink things, especially on the road, you know, as this series shifts back to Golden State. I think I would definitely double LeBron James. And, you know, you do want him pulling up and settling for jumpers, especially this postseason. He's shooting the ball horribly from three-point line. And the teams that have had success are the ones that make him, you know, shoot the ball, but sometimes that's easier said than done. And there are times where he can just pull up for mid-range jumpers and, you know, just make them. He makes it look so easy. So, you know, he's on another level right now. There's really no correct answer, like you said. He's, you know, playing phenomenal basketball, but I think that's probably their best bet, you know, doubling him and then just hoping he takes some more jumpers and trying to bait him into those a bit.
So flipping to the other side, again, you segue in perfectly here. So you are getting an A-plus on this podcast, Alex. But Mike Prada had a good post on SB Nation, and a lot of good photos. And you know, I love posts with photos, you know, especially when they're showing, you know, plays and where people are standing. And he highlights exactly what you just pointed out, that the Warriors are kind of like – not the Warriors, like the Cavaliers are just kind of hovering around the three-point line defensively. Someone is on Steph Curry at all times, and Klay Thompson too. Even if, you know, a man gets beaten behind them, those guards, Dellavedova, is instructed to stay with Curry. Don't worry about anything else. So my question to you is, and I'll let you go, and I'll see if we have the same answer here. How would you adjust if you're Golden State to that strategy? Because it's clearly working. It's frustrating them. You see Curry talk to the officials from time to time, you know, pointing out, you know, grabs and holes and jersey pulls, which, by the way, I don't think I've ever seen as many jersey pulling in one series as I have in this series. But it's just cool. It's everyone's fighting. But how would you adjust offensively if you're Golden State to kind of get around the Cavs just taking away the three-point line?
Well, first of all, that post was amazing by Mike Prada. I would definitely tell anyone who hasn't read it to go check that out, because it was a great breakdown of what's happening in this series so far and why the Warriors' offense hasn't been at the level we expected. But, I mean, I think the easiest way to, you know, combat that is have Draymond Green and Harrison Barnes knock those shots down. If they're making the open shots, then you can't continue with that strategy. You know, they're going to have to adjust and move guys around. So, and that would make things much easier for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson too. So if Green and Barnes and Iguodala and, you know, Livingston at times, if they can knock down those open jumpers that Cleveland's basically giving to them, then the Cavs will have to adjust. They'll have to, you know, shift and start guarding those guys as well. Then they won't be able to do the things they're doing to Curry, and they won't be able to shadow Thompson as well. So that's the easiest answer, but that's obviously easier said than done. It hasn't worked so far. Other things to do, you know, you can try to get Curry some more one-on-one opportunities, just screening a ton, you know, running elevators. They do that really well. Things like that, I think, could be options. They definitely want to get Curry more involved. You know, Curry has not had a great final series so far. We all thought, you know, he would come out and dominate again, like I said, just because he's been amazing all year long. And it still seems so weird every time he misses a shot. You expect every shot he puts up to go in. But I think there's definitely ways to get him some more open looks, or at least, you know, a little bit more open. He doesn't need much room, obviously, with his quick release and his excellent shooting ability. But if they can just get him in, you know, situations where he's one-on-one even, I think that would help him a lot. So I think those are a few things. But, again, the easiest thing that they could do, the easiest way to combat this is have Green, Barnes, and Iguodala knock down shots. If they're doing that and, you know, they're scoring, then they can't really continue with that strategy.
Right. And so, obviously, you need your guys to hit open shots, which is very shocking that Golden State is shooting so poorly in open shots for everybody,
yeah.
Not just one person. It's almost everybody. But what do you do if you're not hitting down shots, if your jumper's not falling? They always say get an easy bucket, get to the free throw line and get in rhythm, or attack the rim. And we saw that early on in Game 3. I believe Curry's first shot attempt, which he missed, was a little bunny in the paint, and then Klay Thompson's first bucket, I believe it was either a dunk or layup. But I liked that, and then it went away, and you didn't see it again. And I'm sitting there watching this game like, all right, the shots aren't falling for you guys. Why aren't you attacking the basket? And plus, as we mentioned a little while ago before, the guards are staying with Curry and Klay. So that's giving guys like Draymond Green, Harrison Barnes, and we can go down the list, the ability to attack the rim, and they're not. I mean, Draymond Green has made the wrong decision almost every time. You know,
yeah.
He'll have an open shot, he'll pass it, and then he'll sprint at Mozgov like he's going to dunk over him. Or vice versa, you know, he'll have a layup, and he'll just turn into a fadeaway or something. It's just, it's very confusing to watch, and I'm really shocked that Golden State is not attacking the rim more. And then on the other side, and this is where the fans don't understand too. Golden State fans are all blaming officials, and, you know, this is what losing fan bases do when they lose games, especially in the playoffs.
Of course,
they blame
yeah.
officials. But if you watch the game, you would see Cleveland was the aggressor. Cleveland's attacking the rim. Everyone's attacking. Tristan Thompson gets how many offensive boards a game? Attacks the rim. Golden State, on the other hand, just settles for jumpers. And I feel like they're taking what the Cavs are giving them instead of running their offense and being the aggressor. So hopefully they do that tonight.
I completely agree with you. I think getting to the rim is going to be important for them. And as you said, I'm surprised they went away from that as well. There have been times, too, where Timothy Mozgov comes out of the game and the Cavs don't really have a great rim protector. You know, they'll play Tristan Thompson at center. But, you know, when Mozgov comes out, I think it's even more important to try to get to the rim or try to get some, you know, closer shots. I think David Lee is going to be important in that regard, too. You know, we saw him play a little bit last game, and I think that they realize he can be an offensive weapon. Because, like you said, when Draymond Green is struggling like the way he is, you know, with his poor decisions, you know, and not really making an impact on the offensive end, going to David Lee and trying to help that stagnant offense, you know, could be an option as well. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw him play more minutes. You know, we saw him a little bit last game. I think that could continue. If Kerr, you know, rolls him out there and it works, then we're probably going to see more of Lee, which is interesting. You know, Green has been so huge for them all season long on both ends of the floor. So the fact that the Cavs have you know, really made him struggle and done a really good job shutting down Curry and Thompson. I think David Blatt deserves a ton of credit. You know, he's been mocked throughout the postseason, and people talk about him being inexperienced, but we're really seeing what he can do as a coach, and especially on the defensive end. He's been terrific, and I think he deserves credit. Obviously, the players deserve credit too, but this is a kind of a blueprint to beat the Warriors, and we really have kind of scratched our heads a bit when we've looked at the Warriors just because they're a great two-way team, and people have wondered how you slow them down. I think we're seeing, you know, a pretty good example of how to do it, or at least contain them.
Yeah, and going back to David Lee, we saw this in the Memphis series where he didn't play the first three games or played 4 minutes in one of them, and then he got a consistent, you know, 15 to 18 minutes for games 4, 5, and 6. And what I liked about David Lee, which I don't know if many people are looking at it this way, you know, they obviously saw the 4 for 4, which he actually made 4 buckets in that game, and Draymond Green made 4 buckets in games 2 and 3 combined for 73 minutes. Can't have that happen. But to me,
yeah.
I liked David Lee running up the court. He was the first one up there on offense. He would push the tempo, and that's when we really saw the swing of the game, and that looked like it was Golden State's offense again. They looked back to normal with David Lee out there. So I agree with you. It'll be interesting to see how Kerr, you know, adjust his lineups a little bit, get Lee a little more involved here, especially with Draymond Green and his back spasms and what have you. But the one player, and we'll wrap this up on this last question for you, Alex, this one player who I thought was going to be an X factor, because he has been for this team throughout the postseason, that's Sean Livingston, and he hasn't really had a game. I figured with his size and his ability, he would be able to take, you know, especially no Kyrie now, basically Dellavedova or J.R. Smith, whoever's on him, I figured he'd be able to exploit those matchups and you know, maybe get some easy buckets and get the offense going.
Yeah, you're right. I think he needs to step up as well. You know, people talk about, you know, the other players need to step up when you talk about Curry, Draymond Green, Harrison Barnes, Klay Thompson, even though he had a great game last game. But Livingston, you know, he has the size and the length to, you know, obviously try to post up Dellavedova, try to score, you know, closer to the basket. And I think also in the defensive end, he can really disrupt some things, and he can make things really interesting. He does a great job of getting in the passing lanes and just being disruptive all around on defense. So I think he is very important. People overlook that, you know, addition over the offseason. But I think, you know, with how well he did last year and what he can do this year, as we've seen at times, he's very important for them, as you mentioned. I think more of a focus needs to be put on that, you know, he can be a two-way player that really ends up making an impact in this series if he's used correctly. Obviously, he's not the best shooter, so that makes it kind of difficult. You know, he's one of those guys that they're kind of daring to shoot, and he hasn't really been able to do that so far. But look, I think in other aspects of the game, he could definitely be an impact player.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And going back on David Blatt, I love that people have the hate on him and, you know, whatever they say. And, he, you know, I could do this with LeBron, and we heard it all. But this guy has won in every league he's played in, every country he's coached in. David Blatt is a phenomenal coach, and I'm glad that he's finally getting the credit. I mean, the media gives him the credit. We know, you know, we have trained eyes. But I don't think the average fan really truly respects him. And the same thing Eric Spoelstra happened. Hey, you were down there. You know all about Eric Spoelstra, you know, getting the cold shaft from fans and the famous LeBron James shoulder bump. But it's nice to see David Blatt getting his credit finally. And if he wins this series, you know, he might be the greatest coach of all time, you know, wherever he just keeps winning. But we're going to plug your podcast one more time, Alex, and I think it's going to be a really, really awesome podcast for people to listen to. Insider Sports Podcast on iTunes. You can go to basketballinsiders.com to find it. They have 2 episodes, so you can get there in the beginning, and you have some really good reviews. So please, guys, go on there and review it. It's a 5-star podcast, and keep doing what you're doing, Alex. You know, you're one of the best out there, and you're climbing the ranks faster than anybody I've ever seen.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate your support. You guys have been there from day one. I think this is one of the earliest shows I did. So thank you so much for all your support throughout the years and supporting the podcast. And you know, hopefully it can be half as good as this one. That's kind of our goal. if we can turn out some consistently, you know, decent podcasts, I think that should be pretty good.
That's the whole key. That's the only advice I can ever give anybody in podcasting is just be consistent, show up. Even if you have a terrible podcast and, you know, you hung over from a night before partying with LeBron James or whatever you have, you just show up to work and you know, that's 90% of the podcasting world. But, Alex, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Everybody, thank you for tuning in.